Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Gains for Girls podcast. I have been traveling like a mad woman recently. I'm in the midst of my college campus speaking tour through the Riley Gaines Center at the Leadership Institute. So last week I just was at Georgia Tech, and University of Georgia, and University of Tampa, University of Florida. Next week I'm going to Cal Berkeley. So this might be the last episode of Gains for Girls ever because I might not make it out of there alive. The last time I was in the Bay Area, San Francisco, it did not go swimmingly, no pun intended, but nonetheless, I'm very excited. Sometimes you have to insert yourself into the belly of the beast because those are the people who need to hear the message most. But today's episode, today's guest, I'm thrilled. I've known her for many years. She is someone who I love, I trust. She's an amazing person with a heart of gold. You might have seen in recent weeks that the NCAA has now been served a lawsuit, really the first of its kind lawsuit, that has been spearheaded by myself and 15 other athletes who have been adversely impacted at the hands of the NCAA and their policies in place, their transgender policies. Today's guest is one of those plaintiffs who has signed on to the lawsuit. She was a collegiate swimmer at University of Kentucky with me. So we swam together. She's a grade younger than me. So we swam together my sophomore, junior, senior year. We were training partners. We swam the same events. And so every single day we were in the lane right next to each other, fighting to keep up with one another. It's impossible to put into words, really, the amount of time and the hours that we spent training side by side. I love her to death. She is someone who has courageously now put her name and her face to this issue. She swam the same events as Leah, formerly Will Thomas, at that national championships. And so she was displaced because of him. Of course, also had to change in the locker room with him. But her story is incredibly inspiring in the way that she found her voice, because it was ultimately when her sister was impacted, her younger sister. We will be talking about that lawsuit, all things this issue in this episode. So check out my interview with Caitlin Wheeler. Well, Caitlin, which it's weird calling you Caitlin, honestly, for the viewers' purposes. Of course, we swam in college together. Your name, your last name is Wheeler. Everyone called you Wheels. And so for the purpose of, I guess, my own sanity and what I'm comfortable with, I'm calling you Wheels on this podcast. But man, we could sit on here and talk for hours about just our memories and all of the stories we have to tell about our time together swimming at Kentucky. But I wanted you to just tell us a little bit about you. Of course, your college experience, because our college experience was nothing short of crazy. And of course, the way that we dealt with competing against and changing a locker room with a man. But I think people forget, or maybe don't even realize, that we were athletes, college athletes, during the time of COVID, which was a whole different, separate experience. But there's a lot of parallels. So just tell us a little bit about you and your college experience.
Yeah, well, thanks, Riley. And Wheels is definitely, that sounds a lot more natural than Caitlin. So you could definitely call me Wheels. But yeah, a little bit about me. I grew up swimming. I started swimming when I was 4 years old. Swimming had really been a big part of my life for 18 years. I'm a year retired now from swimming, and I'm really fortunate to have had the sport of swimming because it really taught me a lot of things. One of my goals early on in swimming was to swim in college. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to swim at Kentucky. And like you said, we were faced with a lot of adversity, a lot of challenges. Coming in my freshman year, obviously, you're thrown all of these new curveballs at you that you have to adjust to training, you have to adjust to just being a college student. I moved 6 hours away from home. So it was kind of really the first time I'd been away from my family ever. And so it was a huge adjustment for me. But that year, I was really just trying to keep my head above water. As I'm sure you could relate it to freshman year. You're just trying to get through. You're trying to learn your place on the team. You're trying to figure out training your bodies, like just trying to keep up with the pace of college, being a college athlete. And so that first season, you know, I did pretty well, I would say. Obviously, I had some really high goals and stuff, but that first year was a struggle for sure. I was fortunate enough to be able to go to NCAAs. I was going to get to go on a relay. And about a few days before the meet, we were pulled out of practice and told that we had to pack up our stuff and go home, and that NCAAs was canceled. So it was really disappointing because, you know, you work months endlessly to finish this, the season, which is really like the pinnacle of the season. That's where you kind of get to suit up and taper down and really see results and stuff. And so not being able to kind of put the bow tie on that season was really disappointing. We were then faced with COVID, which was a crazy experience for really everyone in the world. But being a student athlete, it was much more difficult because there were no gyms open, there were no pools open. And being a swimmer, you have to stay in the pool in order to stay in shape. And so I remember swimming in a pond down the street from my house. It was super cold. I don't really know how much I got out of it, but I knew that I needed to stay in the water to some capacity. So that way, when I returned in the fall, I could be in some type of shape. And so returning in the fall, you know, we were faced with COVID. Going into that fall, obviously, we had a lot of restrictions. We had a lot of masking, a lot of, you know, telling us we needed to get the vaccine to keep our teammates safe. A lot of restrictions, a lot of close contacting that prevented us from having consistent trainings. And so it just seemed like there was obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. And so sophomore year, I really felt like I finally understood where I needed to be. I felt like I was developing some consistency. I would say that my sophomore year was probably one of my best years. Not just from a competitive performance standpoint, but we were able to win a SEC championship for the first time in women's history, which was really awesome. So it was a really great season. And so I was motivated and encouraged going into my junior year, which was the 2021-22 season. Really excited, had a lot of high goals. I know you and I were training partners, so we swam literally every single day together, right next to each other. Me most of the time was just struggling to keep up with you. But you know what I really liked though was our team. You know, we wanted to know each other's goals. Like I knew what your goals were. I was invested in your goals just as much as you were invested in mine. Like I felt like I wanted to know what you were doing and you wanted to know what I was doing. And so I remember halfway through that season, we had gone to midseason. Our rankings came out, and that's really where we see where we're ranked going in NCAAs. And the whole controversy with Thomas, I know you've shared this story a lot, of us realizing that this person who's ranked in multiple events by seconds and in the women's category is not, in fact, the woman, is actually a man. And so we were kind of relieved because we thought the NCAA would definitely not allow a man to compete at the women's NCAA meet, but in fact they did. And so going into that NCAA meet, was there were a lot of questions and we really didn't know what to expect. I know you shared the story, so I don't want to kind of share it again, but I stood on the pool deck and I watched you miss out on your award. The award that you earned was given to a man. I watched Reka and her tears. I saw the heartbreak on the pool deck, but I also was in the locker room, and that for me was definitely a super shocking and humiliating experience, because I never thought I would be in a locker room changing, especially in a vulnerable environment as the locker room is, and seeing a man in there. So that definitely changed my whole perspective on a locker room, but really it changed my perspective of the NCAA. This organization was one that I had trusted up until that moment, had our best interests at heart. And it was then when I realized that, you know, maybe we shouldn't trust the NCAA. Maybe what they're doing isn't right. Maybe allowing this man to compete at this meet isn't right. So there were a lot of questions that were raised and kind of brought to our attention. And so after that meet, I watched you courageously stand up and start speaking out and really sharing your story. And that was like super inspiring for me. I didn't feel like I necessarily had the platform to share my story. I didn't feel like, I guess it hadn't really hit me. But fast forward a year later, something very similar happened to my little sister, my younger sister, Abigail, who was 16 years old at the time. She swam for my former club team, which is the YMCA team. And the YMCA team shares locker rooms with its YMCA members. And in this locker room, I remember I had just retired from swimming, getting ready to go on a trip to Europe. I get a call from her and she's like, I can tell she's upset. I was like, what's wrong? And she said, I went into the locker room after practice today, and I saw two men in the locker rooms changing. And immediately I was taken aback because I had been through an experience just like this, except this was with a 22-year-old man and a 19-year-old girl. But now it's happening to my little sister, who's 16, and these men are 50, 60-year-old adult men. And so I was furious. It is sick. And I was furious with the coach. I was furious that the YMCA was allowing this to happen. So I was like, you need to go tell your coach. You need to tell him what's happening. And she was like, at this point in tears, and she was like, I did tell him. And she was dismissed by him. He said that they actually knew that this was happening and there was nothing they could do about it. And that if she felt uncomfortable changing in the women's locker room, she could go and change in the individual locker rooms. And so she did, from that point on, change in the individual locker rooms.
It's the same story every time. It's the same story every time. And you would think that it's like not even shocking anymore that this is the response that these weak coaches or weak, I mean, leaders in air quotes, they have the same response every time, which is so disheartening. Anyways, keep going.
Yeah, no, and you're so right. It's very similar to what the NCAA did. You know, they didn't want to take the accountability and the responsibility that they should have. The YMCA did the exact same thing. They didn't want to take responsibility for this. Instead,
like Young Men's Christian Association, like they've totally, as we've now seen with Planet Fitness, I mean, they've totally lost their values, their foundation at which they were created upon, entirely thrown out of the window.
You're totally right. My parents, my little sister, they went to the YMCA board about this. They tried to fight back. They were like, at the very least, let these families who are sending their 5 and 6-year-old up little girls into practice, then go change in a locker room where men are changing. At least let them know that this is happening. That way they can make the conscious decision to go and change in the individual locker rooms. And they said that they could not do that. They could not alert the members that this was happening. That would be discrimination. And so my little sister and a teammate decided that since they weren't letting the women in the locker rooms know that this was happening, they weren't letting the parents know, that they decided to hang up signs in locker rooms. And these signs simply said women's rights, keep female locker rooms female, and safe sport. And they were pulled aside at practice the next day and told that they found hateful messages hung up in the locker rooms, very hateful messages that were discriminatory and disrespectful. And my sister went up to him immediately and was like, I just want to let you know, I was loudly a part of this. You know, I grew up in a Christian home. I know what the Christian values are. And the YMCA, in their mission statement, clearly say they're to be upholding the Christian values. And by allowing this, they're failing to do that. And they're also putting young girls and women in an unsafe environment. And this is wrong. And so I'm so proud of her for really doing that. Really inspiring. But she was responded to that she would no longer be able to swim the team anymore. And she would, in fact, later on be banned from the YMCA facility. And so going through that experience with my little sister was like the pivotal point for me to realize, you know, this has shown up now twice in my own family. This isn't going away. This is, yeah, in a span of a year, not even. So I really felt at that point God was calling on me, and calling me really into my purpose. And that is to stand up for not just my little sister, but stand up for my future daughters, my little cousins, and all the young female athletes out there. That's why this is not just a sports issue. This isn't just a women's spaces issue. And I know we're seeing it in women's prisons, sororities, domestic violence shelters. It's really happening everywhere.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let's just, I guess, for a very clear picture here. For standing up for herself and for the other girls on the team and putting these signs up in the locker room that merely said, you know, women's rights and keep women's spaces for women, she was kicked off of her team, had to go practice with another team, and then ultimately banned from the YMCA, with the YMCA saying they could do absolutely nothing about it.
Yes, I mean, that is literally what happened. And, you know, that just goes to show, you know, people ask, why aren't people speaking up and sharing their stories? You know, why aren't people saying something? Well, it's because of things like this. You know, my little sister got kicked off her swim team. You know, she wasn't allowed to swim for the team anymore, and do her sport just because she said she wasn't comfortable changing next to a man who was changing and exposing himself to her. So that's really where we are. It's absolutely crazy, and it needs to be stopped. And parents need to take accountability and responsibility and start protecting their children. And a lot of them are afraid to, unfortunately. And I think just are falling into this, the bullying mindset of the people in leadership that are telling us, you know, don't speak up or you're going to be basically reprimanded for it. So,
and you're right. The risk and the threats, like, they're very real and they exist. And we both, you and me, I know, have seen them play out in our own experiences with people we know close to us who have taken a stance, which you mentioned something when kind of explaining your college experience, which I thought about, which I think is incredibly telling, because during COVID, of course, as you said, right, like, it was miserable being a college athlete, being a human during this time. But we had to deal with the contact tracing and the mandatory mask and the vaccines and the social distancing, which is such a silly concept in the sport of swimming, this idea of mask. I will never forget getting out of the water, being like force-fed your wet, itchy, scratchy mask you had to put on after a race. You're huffing and puffing, breathing in, you know, trying to grasp for oxygen. You just race for 2 minutes or whatever. Then you're sucking in water off your mask. I mean, it was a miserable experience. But one thing that I think is interesting and, again, telling is that when our trainers and different people came in and told us that we had to get this vaccine, it would help us, it would save us. You know, we were supposed to be the leaders. I remember specifically conversations that we were involved with administrators and authority figures telling us, hey, you guys are leaders. You're supposed to be leading this team, and you're letting your team down if you don't get the vaccine. But what I thought was so interesting about both you and myself on a team of 40-ish girls, there were very few, maybe three girls in the entire team who didn't get the vaccine. And look, it's not because me personally, it's not because I'm anti-vax or anything like that, but I'm young, I'm healthy, I'd already had COVID, which I thought was the best and most effective form of immunity, these antibodies that I had, and they're telling me I have to get a vaccine, which we don't know anything about. No way. But you and I both said no, is what I'm getting at here. And I think it's, speaking for myself again, and I'll let you speak to this, but that is really when I learned how to say no to authority figures. And it's the same tactics they use, right? That same gaslighting, telling us we would be hurting someone our my junior year, your sophomore year, if we didn't get the vaccine, and then our senior year telling us that if we did speak out about this, we'd be hurting people. I mean, it's the same emotional blackmail that we faced both during COVID and during this whole debacle of Leah Thomas. I imagine you have a very similar experience there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And looking back on it now, it kind of makes a lot of sense. And it's also really scary for the other people who just kind of were like, oh, I'm being told I need to do this, you know, so I must do it. It's fearful. It's scary to think, you know, how far people would be willing to go just because someone is telling them to do something and that this is right. Like you said, I feel like going through both of those experiences and just really all through college, I learned how to think for myself. I think my parents did a great job of really instilling that in me, not to just blindly follow the people who are telling you what to do. Really think about what you're doing. Think about how it impacts others. Think about how it impacts your future. And so I did definitely develop a sense of thinking for myself and not always trusting that the systems in place have your best interests at heart. Similar with the NCAA, obviously we're now in a lawsuit with them because they failed us on multiple accounts and continue to fail us, and they refuse to take accountability and responsibility. And so I'm really encouraged because I really feel like people are finally starting to wake up. They're starting to see that other people are speaking out and they're being empowered to share their stories and speak out. And so it's super encouraging. I think our generation is really awesome and hopefully will help turn really our nation around, because we're in a huge mess. This speaks to the greater issues in our society today.
Definitely. Yeah. You mentioned the lawsuit, which of course was strategically done in terms of the timing, in terms of you know, what we're suing for, why we're suing. And you said it best, right? Like the NCAA's most basic duties. I mean, their most basic duties, really their only job, is to provide safety and privacy in areas of undressing and equal opportunities for both sexes, not just women, but for both sexes. And they have failed and continue to fail. So I guess, you know, you kind of touched on it, but what are we really hoping to get out of this lawsuit?
Yeah, well, obviously, we'd like to see the leadership of the NCAA. People like Charlie Baker, who I mentioned, has a wife who played college sports and has a daughter who played sports. Right. I would really like to see him say, no, you know, what we're doing, this policy we have in place, that really is violating women, putting women in their safety in jeopardy. You know, this is wrong and we need to turn this around. But unfortunately, I think we're dealing with a lot of weak leadership. I think we're seeing this across the board, not just within the NCAA. The people in the White House are a great example of that. The ones who are currently rewriting Title IX to make it more trans inclusive, which to me, really, at the end of the day, just means anti-woman. That's what I've learned or taken from it. But we have weak leadership at the top and it trickles down to the rest. But ultimately, we're demanding that the NCAA change its policy and start protecting its female athletes. We aren't asking for much. People are acting like the NCAA and all of these people are acting like we're asking for so much. But in fact, we're asking for the bare minimum. And if our leaders are still unwilling to do the right thing, then I suggest they resign from their jobs immediately so that we can put people in leadership who have the courage to make the right call.
Like Bill Bach, who is actually, he was on the podcast actually a few weeks ago. This is the, he was on the NCAA board. He was a board member. He was an official who has now stepped down because of these policies. And he is actually our attorney and our lawyer who has filed suit with us. So he's incredible. He's an incredible display of leadership, of someone who has tenacity and who has grit and who has a moral compass at that. So I could not agree more. If you are someone who encourages this, or even if you are someone who stays silent as this is happening, understand you're just as complicit as the people who created and enforced these policies. And I agree. I think stepping down and resigning would be necessary, and I would argue urgent. What's your response when people say, and I hear it all the time, you know, they look at this lawsuit and they see this as an attack on people who identify as trans?
Yeah. Well, this lawsuit is not anti-anything. I believe anti-trans, all of this anti-talk is really just a loose term they throw around to try to scare people and really silencing people. But this lawsuit isn't about hurting anyone. In fact, it's about helping the women who have been hurt,
right,
and preventing it from happening in the future. And it's about ensuring fair and equal and safe competition, which really at the end of the day is something I believe everyone should want. At the end of the day, I believe in fairness and equal opportunity. I see what's at stake. You see what's at stake. The other girls who have gone through, they're different ways they've been impacted by this gender ideology, this trans movement. They see what's at stake. Allowing men into women's locker rooms, allowing them into our sports, is completely unacceptable. And I believe I speak for all of the girls on the lawsuit when I say we don't want to have to be filing a lawsuit. We shouldn't have to be the ones holding the NCAA accountable to the law. This shouldn't be our job, because our leadership is failing us. And unfortunately, they have forced our hand. They're, like you said, they're failing in their most basic duties, and they put the responsibility in the hands of young girls and female athletes to do something about it.
And here we are. You mentioned, you know, taking this step out, putting your neck out, really. And even with the position you're in now, working in a university administration, it's pretty terrifying. But on top of the lawsuit, what other actions have you been taking across the nation, specifically in your home state of Illinois, to really ensure that single-sex spaces are protected?
Yeah, so currently in the state of Illinois, obviously, it's a very blue state. So getting anything really passed is going to be very difficult. It's going to be a challenge, but I still think that it's worth the fight. At the end of the day, I don't think this should be a political issue. I don't think this is a left or right wing issue. It's a common sense issue, really. And so we're currently working on getting a bill introduced in the state of Illinois that's similar to the Women's Bill of Rights, that really just reaffirms legal protection afforded to women under the federal law, and really just defines the word woman. And so hopefully this bill will be successful. But again, it's worth a try. I'm working with some legislators there, some different groups. The Illinois Freedom Caucus has really been kind of spearheading this whole thing and have been really awesome. So trying to make some changes in different states, my home state. And I know you're working alongside other groups to do the same in other states, which is really awesome. But you mentioned this being interesting because my whole career path has been really paved with the goal of working in college athletics, really working for the NCAA, or at least the university, which is super ironic to now be suing the very organization I had my entire career been hoping for. They say don't bite the hand that feeds you, but that's just kind of what I've done. But really, that hand is feeding us poison and lies. So I feel like through all of this, through all of these experiences, my life has definitely made a dramatic turn in the last year, for sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's poison and lies is certainly what they're feeding. But yeah, you mentioned the Freedom Caucuses, who are just wonderful. The work they're doing and really exposing, you mentioned Illinois, right? It's unlikely that a bill like the Women's Bill of Rights will get passed in Illinois, but it's important to set the precedent and to get these people on record, on voting record, showing they either stand with women or they don't. And it's never been on the wrong side of history to stand with women.
So what you're doing is pivotal. You have already had so much impact. What's next for you?
Well, we're obviously going to keep fighting with this lawsuit. It could be, you know, a long process. I hope to see some good progress with it. But it's kind of like a waiting game at this point. I'm graduating in May. I'm graduating from grad school, which I'm super excited about. I'm ready to kind of make that next step and start that next chapter. I'm going to be joining this fight full time and dedicating all of my time to fighting for women and women's sports. Obviously, this is something that I felt that God has really called me to. It's not what I planned on doing, but hopefully it's not something I have to do forever, because I don't see this issue being relevant forever. I really truly believe that truth does prevail in the end. And so hopefully this is only a short-term job. But yeah, I actually had a question for you, Riley. Obviously, you have had an amazing and supportive family, and husband, Louis, has been truly super strong through this whole journey. I remember when you started speaking out, I had no doubt you wouldn't be a great leader in this fight, because this is exactly how you led our team. You're an amazing team captain. You led our team to a lot of success, and you taught me a lot, not just in the pool, but outside of the pool, and really helped me to be the best athlete, but also person I could be. So I had no doubts when you started speaking out and kind of leading us down this path that we're on now. But what have been some things that maybe you have struggled with on this journey that maybe you haven't been able to share about?
Man, it is just, I don't know if people understand like the emotional toll that this battle takes. It's so draining because, again, we see this as something that is so black and white, so basic, yet you're fighting with people and you're having to converse with people. You're having to go to DC to sit in front of Congress to explain that men and women are different. And it just blows my mind how people don't understand, don't see this the way that I see it. Again, not hateful, nothing even opinionated. It's just the fact that men and women are different. And so it really takes an emotional toll. The comments, of course, on social media, the time that's spent away from home and from my family and from, you mentioned Louis, my husband and my dogs and now my horse. I just got a horse. All of those things, like I want nothing more. Just like you said, I don't want to be doing this. Who in their right mind would want to be doing this? But it's necessary for people like Abigail, your younger sister. It's necessary for our future daughters. You know, that's what's at stake here. You and I, we're done competing. It's not about you and I anymore. We're not suing the NCAA so we can compete again or so that we can get another opportunity. No way. But it's for that next generation. That's who we're fighting for, the present female athletes, even the women who came before us, who fought relentlessly for Title IX, so we could have the opportunities that we were so fortunate to have. That's what this is about. And it's worth it when you look at it from that lens. But man, it takes a toll. There are days when I don't want to get on Twitter and argue back and forth with people. There are days when I don't want to have to spend my time saying the same thing, the most basic thing, till I'm blue in the face over and over and over again. But persistence, it matters. Consistency matters. And that's what you and I have both been doing. And I imagine we will continue doing it. Another thing you and I are doing soon is we're swimming Alcatraz, which is exciting. That means we have to survive like San Francisco before we even get to the water. Hopefully we don't like step on feces or like needles, but yes. So look, I'm just like you, right? Like a smile on my face, a light heart. I stay grounded. I know the mission, and you hit the nail on the head. Playing sports, it teaches you those things. It teaches you how to set goals and work to achieve those goals. And that's what you and I are doing. So it's worth it. It's necessary. And onwards, bring it on.
I love that. I just want to say that, you know, I think I speak for a lot of the women out there that we appreciate you, Riley. You've been amazing and super encouraging and bold. And you've sacrificed a lot in your own life. And so we greatly appreciate it. It's definitely inspired me to speak out and kind of start down this journey as well. And so I'm happy to be alongside you, happy to be alongside fighting with you. And I know a lot of women are going to be encouraged to stand up and do the exact same thing. So thank you.
Well, and you, I just love you. And like you said, we have been training partners for forever, as next to each other in the lanes next to each other for 3 years. You're a year younger than me, so my sophomore, junior, senior year. And you make me a better person. So this is super exciting for me. It's kind of like this full circle moment where it feels like we're back on a team again. But this fight, this race seems a lot more drastic and a lot more heavy and a lot harder, which I never thought I would say there's a race harder than the 200 free, but here we are. So you're the best. I cannot appreciate you more for coming on.
Thanks, Riley.
Having her on and just talking with her, of course, we talk often, but it floods me with all the memories of our collegiate career, all the good memories and the bad ones. But I could not be more grateful for her for coming on. Thank you guys for tuning in. I forgot to mention that Caitlin is also an ambassador with the Riley Gaines Center, meaning she is also getting on college campuses. She is speaking, again, really being bold, putting her neck out there. But thanks for tuning in. Make sure you like and subscribe and comment anywhere where you get your podcasts. Make sure you check us out at outkick.com. And we will see you again next week. Thanks, guys.